Apes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Well, welcome everybody.
This is Tapes and Scowls.
That's who we are.
I am scowling.
I am also scowling.
There is no taping.
We're taping the scowls together.
Yes.
To make a super scowl.
One big scowl.
Yes. It's a little tricky because, you know, you got to have one side really low and another side to meet in the middle.
That's right.
Yeah. We're getting better at it. Synchronized scowling. We're trying to make it a real thing.
Yes.
I think we have a real shot, buddy.
I think so.
I don't think we have a good shot of great movies on this episode. What do you think? Do we?
No.
No? That's unfortunate. Should they just turn it off now?
No, they need to hear our griping.
They need to understand.
Yeah, they need their weekly dose of me and you griping.
Griping about these movies that we watch to ourselves. Why do we do this? It's wild.
Mostly to hang out, I think.
Oh yeah, that's right. Hi everybody.
Yeah,
we enjoy hanging out.
Not with these people. I mean.
Oh no, they can. Yeah, they can.
Yeah, just, I don't know why you're listening.
The worst.
Yeah.
Do hate them. Anyways, I got a movie. You got a movie.
Yes.
What do you want to do about that?
Probably talk about them.
All right, you want to go first? You want to go second?
I'll go second.
Then I will start it off real energetic, like.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about. You ready for this piece of shit?
Okay.
All right. 2021's The Resonator. Miskatonic you.
Uh-oh.
Ruh-roh, Raggy.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I watched this on October 7th, 2024. I must have 2021. It is an hour, 8 minutes.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Speaking of different runtimes, we talked about that last episode.
Yeah.
Last week. Your genre, regular-ass fantasy, regular-ass horror, and regular-ass sci-fi.
Mm.
Director is William Butler.
William Butler.
Who must love bad movies because it's about all he made. Your cast includes Amanda Weiss, Michael Paré, and Amanda Jones.
Man, Amanda Weiss, huh?
Yeah, she
drug
in
her
here.
Into this one.
What's that?
Drug her into this one.
They did it.
Okay.
Kicking and screaming. They did it.
Fair enough.
Your movie summary. Set in the fictional college campus, Miskatonic U, in Arkham, Massachusetts.
That's right.
Where all sorts of fantastical and unworldly events have been known to unfold in Lovecraft lore.
Lovecraft lore.
The Resonator, Miskatonic U. It's already bad. They said the name of the thing in the title.
Yep.
Follows six gifted students as they navigate life after one of them, Crawford Tillinghast, builds a machine that blah, 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 blah. Awful summary. It's a portal to another dimension.
He actually wrote blah, blah.
No, I wrote
blah.
It.
I see it. I see it. I'm just calling it out for the audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, no, I write my blahs.
Yeah, it's written out with ellipses and everything.
I don't fuck around.
No, that's legitimately professional.
Yes. I'm not some sort of savage.
No.
That was a couple episodes ago. This is a huge piece of crap. My oldest daughter and her boyfriend picked this out.
Okay.
Man, and there are sequels. And several sequels, it appears. Kind of with like a reanimator type character.
Makes sense.
Right? So, ugh. This movie had an estimated $150,000 budget. And Butler's probably biggest credit, he was a writer on season 4 of Greg Nicotero's Creepshow on Shudder.
Okay.
So that's a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That is surely a thing.
Brought on a lot of talent.
This is one of those movies that is filmed really clean and shiny. Everything's very, like, pretty looking.
Okay.
I definitely have a problem with the cast being too beautiful.
Okay.
Every man and woman in this thing are, like, gorgeous. The nerdy guy who's supposed to be the bumbling idiot nerd could probably beat my ass. So it's a bad sign, all
yeah.
right? It is very much like, oh, does he like me? Like, it's like this weird, it's trying to do these cliche things of like, oh, I'm in college and I want to be a scientist, but I also want to date the hot chick.
Okay.
I don't know why you're complaining. Everyone's gorgeous at this fucking university. But basically, the kid follows in his dad's footsteps who developed the plans for the resonator, and his father died mysteriously, and it's just like, I'm going to build this resonator, and he summons a bunch of Cthulhu kind of monsters. The effects are okay.
All
it's right. A mix of CGI that is like meh,
okay.
Like smart meh.
Okay.
But then there are some good practical effects in here. It's just kind of like, man, because like there's this creepy woman that shows up with like tentacle head and it's just no eyes, just tentacles, very creepy looking.
That's cool.
And I'm like, I really like this. I want to talk about about how good this is.
Right.
This is literally the only good part.
That's fair. Yeah, it's a shame when you see the movie where it's like, oh, there's these moments or this idea or these parts that really get you excited, and then it like aggravates you with the rest of the movie.
Right.
It's like, why wasn't the rest of this good?
There's an evil dean who is probably some sort of warlock. It's just so bad.
That's fair.
I do enjoy, there was a funny spot that made me laugh where the dean basically bullies the jock character for being too good at sports, and that's not what this university is about. He's like, football, you'll never get anywhere with football.
That's pretty wild.
That was a fun little bit, but most of this movie is quite forgettable, so that's probably it, man. There's sequels. They're all on Tubi, I believe. I don't want to do it.
No, and it's a shame when, and one of the things calling out is how pretty and nice things look. It's like, it's funny when you take the budget and you look at probably like how much equipment was put into this, because the goal, a lot of filmmakers set out with a goal of, and I don't want to cast any dispersions or try to put on what they were doing, but they tend to prioritize what I'll air quote as production value.
Right.
Like, I want to put something on the screen that looks expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's cool. But I think we've proven now, especially with the modern day of streaming, where it's like, it doesn't matter if it's a low budget movie that came out on Tubi. It doesn't matter if it's a mini series. It's like, if it's a story that is worth telling and you take the time, and again, it doesn't cost much here. They're in the writing phase. We're in the workshopping phase. If you take the time and the effort to make sure the story is truly worth being told,
yep,
and it's told in a thoughtful way, or it's told in the most effective way you can tell your story, then you've done your job, and then 80% of that's accomplished, right? And then the rest of that's going to come from good casting, not just attractive casting, but good casting, because you have well-written characters who are well-motivated, and there's a plot here that helps serve a greater story that has themes and depth. All of that tends to get left out of these, like, more, we're just making a horror movie that looks really cool because we wanted to make a horror movie that looks really cool.
And, like, none of those actors were honestly that bad.
Right.
But, like, the combination doesn't really work. They're all the same kind of character. They're
right.
Not diverse enough. And, I mean, they built the resonator in an abandoned warehouse. Like, put some dirt on their pants. Like, come on, man. Like, that cost you nothing.
Yeah.
Like, lean down.
Right.
So,
it's just a shame when those things tend to get overlooked, because it's like, I would much rather watch a scrappy, you know, sub $10,000 movie.
Yeah.
From filmmakers who wanted to make it. Like, you can tell. Like, they had a $10,000 budget. They put $20,000 on the screen. You know what I mean? All their time and effort and blood and sweat and tears and intelligence and scrap and moxie and grit, whatever you want to call it.
That's right.
Went into that on their fucking shoestring webcam or phone cam or whatever they shot it on. I don't give a shit. As long as I can hear it and the audio's decent and I can mostly see it, I don't care about anything else other than you have a good story, you have compelling characters, you tell something. There's something there at the end of it that draws me in.
It's
just a shame when it's like, we want to put a lot of polish up. What did you polish? There's nothing here. There's no substance. You've polished polish, basically.
Polishing the polish.
Yeah, it's just a shame.
Well, enough about this piece of crap, and I will not do the sequels. I just don't see a reason to. IMDb gave this a 4.9.
Okay.
Too scared to commit to that 5.0.
That's right.
The critics at Rotten Tomatoes, nobody for the critics. There were some scores in for the audience, but less than 50, so it does not have an official score.
Okay.
I gave this a 3.0.
Oof.
It has a couple redeeming qualities. And that's about it.
Sounds like three of them.
Yes.
Ouch.
Yikes.
Okay.
What you got, fool?
I have a horror.
Okay.
I watched this on October 15th of 2024. It came out in 2021.
Okay.
It is Fear Street 1666.
We're going to talk about that witch, huh?
That witch.
Let's get into it.
This is a regular ass horror mystery, direct once again by Lee Janiak, starring Emily Rudd, Kiana Medaria, Sadie Sink, Olivia Scott Welsh.
Okay.
The summary for this one: in 1666, a colonial town is gripped by a witch hunt that has deadly consequences for centuries to come. While teenagers in 1994, that's the year I couldn't remember.
There it is.
Try to put an end to their town's curse before it's too late.
I do like that they're trying to wrap this all together in three different decades.
Yeah, it's interesting. As a trilogy, it's really interesting. And the cool thing is I get to talk about all of them now.
Right.
So 94 is, like I told you, it's definitely like parallels to Scream and the horror movies of that era. Then you have the cut to 78, which is the slasher camp 80s style horror film, and now you have 66, which is much more in line with like very classic witch kind of fare. Less witch stuff, more like the corruption of people, much more akin to Arthur Miller's The Crucible, more than something like an actual witch movie, more like less than like a Suspiria or a Rosemary's Baby or something like that.
Sure.
This is much more a misunderstood girl who is, she is in love with another girl, and so of course she is a witch and has brainwashed this other girl who is the son of, or the daughter of the local pastor.
I was going to say, it's getting more complex by the second.
Right, and that's and so then this girl actually does put a curse on the town because the town is like, she's a witch, she corrupted this girl, and in order to save that girl, she ends up hanging as a witch to save that girl. And then, no, you're right, she's not, you know, as if that's homosexuality can't exist. Yeah, it's actually kind of, that part of it's actually kind of lovely, and the fact that she'd be willing to, and the fact that it's like, you know what, I would totally believe that more than one person was burned as a witch because they were gay. Like, that would not surprise me even a little bit.
Right.
Because, you know, it was so biblical then.
For sure.
And definitely Old Testament-y, and those things are definitely called out at points. Mm-hmm. I think wrongfully interpreted, but called out at certain points, and I think there are definitely some thumpers who would, at that point in time, would have said that the only way that you could have an unholy relationship like this is for the devil to have possessed somebody, or this one's using, you know, as an instrument of the devil, or whatever you want to call it. So definitely authentic there. Outside of that, it's a little thin.
Okay.
Like, that moment is really cool, and you realize that the woman who's cursed the town that you think's evil the whole time actually wasn't. That there was another evil. So who is that evil?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. We find out that it's actually stems from the, not pastor, but one of the more, seems to be good dudes in the village. In fact, his name is Good.
Oh.
And his lineage goes through the town, and there's even a sheriff in 1994 who happens to be the X number grandkin of this Good character who is named Good.
That's good storytelling.
Yeah. And he is actually evil, and they're continuing the satanic ritual that's keeping a curse on the town.
Dang.
Yeah, so that's kind of the like the dun-dun-dun, which actually like pretty good considering this is a teen fare like that R.L. Stine worked and was adapted. Like, pretty neat.
They were right. It was the devil's work.
Yeah. Right. It's just, it's like a cool reason that the spite kind of did it, and it wasn't her being evil. It was the town being less than accommodating, less than understanding and accepting, and it's like they're kind of, it's like the spite, right? Like, kind of that humility is what cost them years and years of their ancestors being tortured by this quote-unquote curse. And then you get back to 94, and it's like, we gotta fight these things. They find out that, like, the blood of the cursed, the last person who's cursed draws them, so they, like, use super soakers, legit, like, of 94 super soakers of the girl's blood, and spray it all over to draw the possessed ghouls from all the different eras into the mall, and they have to, because it's the 90s, so you gotta, you gotta fight in the mall. Because Stranger Things did it in the 80s.
Right.
So, again, a little cliche, a little bit cumbersome in what it was trying to do, but the core idea is easy to convey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is, like you said, it's kind of a lovely notion, and it's a cool idea that I think is pretty neat. I think the cool one of the cool things they did, cool and like kind of odd, is they used the same cast for a lot of the three parts.
Oh, like American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, okay, this like person was in 78 as a completely different person, but he's in 66.
Are they supposed to be relatives to the people in each one?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It's just like they're using the same cast, but it's like, it feels a little cosplay-y or a little fake-y.
Right, I can see that.
Especially in 66, where it's just like, doesn't quite feel super authentic now that you're like cascading the actors through all the different time periods. It loses a little bit of its allure or a little bit of authenticity.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it was like, it was a cool idea. I just don't think it was a terribly successful one. So overall, I enjoyed it, but it was fine. Like, I think that the notion, the core idea was cool. The rest is just not for me, I think is the best way to put it. I think if non-horror fan reviewed it, and I think you'll see it again in Sam's score versus mine, I think the less horror you are, the more this will appeal to you, and I think it's fantastic for gateway horror. So despite
that's good.
Yeah, despite my score, I don't want to, like, talk down about it. I think it's really exciting to see movies and things like this that are that springboard from like the stuff that you would watch as a kid to lightly get you into like slightly spooky into this is like that next level where it's not going to be like a gross out or it's not going to be challenging. It's not going to be hard to watch, but it's going to be a mid ground before it's like the step before that. You're going to get to that like, oh, this is bloody and it's graphic. And it's a little scary, but it's not really super dangerous or upsetting. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good mid ground between that entry level and like full on challenging horror that you get. So I think it's a cool space and I'm glad that these do exist. Again, I don't want you to think my score is the definitive one. It's just how it struck me.
That's fair.
IMDb gave it a 6.6 out of 10.
Oh man.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, 99 critics, 89%.
Interesting.
The audience of 1,000 plus gave it 76%. I gave it a 5.5 out of 10.
Okay.
Because I think there's just a lot of things that did not work, and a lot, so much of it is premised upon the idea of latching onto things that have already existed before it.
Okay.
And I think that have done it well. I think if you're familiar with The Crucible and you watch this, you're going to be like, okay, I get it. It's a little less complex than it's just like entry level The Crucible.
Sure.
So it's just kind of like, all right, cool. So it didn't do it for me.
Right.
But again, super happy that this exists. And I would definitely encourage anybody who's younger and looking to get into horror. Like if there was a 16-year-old who came up to me and said, I've watched as a kid, I watched some whatever younger stuff, or I've seen like a Universal Monster movie, or I watched The Goonies or like Monster Squad or something along those lines. What's the next step for me? Or I watched, you know, some of the spookier stuff and I want to get into more horror, I'd be like, this is actually a pretty good little stepping stone. Try the Fear Street movies and see what you make of them.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I'm really glad it exists. Sam gave it a 7 out of 10.
Oh, nice.
So you can see that I think the less ensconced in horror, the less grizzled horror movie veteran you are, the higher your score will probably be for this entry or for this series of entries. And on the whole, as a trilogy, I'm definitely excited for the next one that's coming out in 2025. So it's good enough to hold my attention, and I will definitely check it out. I think it's called Prom Queen.
Okay.
So I'm interested. I'll watch it for sure just to see what they're bringing to the table, and I'm always happy to see that there's horror for that like teenager, not necessarily an adult. So I'm happy about that for sure.
Have at it, kids.
Yeah.